So why did I come all the way to Rome to interview Steve Bannon? Well, Italy's politics were in absolute chaos this week, and Bannon has a lot to say about the subject.
We're coming up on the 10th year anniversary of the financial crisis. The fuse that was lit then that eventually brought the Trump revolution is the same thing that's happened here in Italy.
Hi, this is Kate Waldock from Georgetown University.
And this is Luigi Zingales at the University of Chicago.
You're listening to Capitalismed, a podcast about what's working in capitalism today.
And most importantly, what isn't.
What a week to be in Italy. I was invited here to Rome by Steve Bannon, who has been an avid supporter of the populist movement here, a movement that has created even more political chaos than Italy usually has.
Luigi, you were just in Italy this past weekend, right? So are things absolutely wild over there?
Yeah, I think things are pretty crazy, but there are a lot of people who are upset. There are a lot of people that are interested in what's happening. And I think that what's happening is should be watched also from the United States because, you know, it can be game-changing.
And I think they were being watched in the United States, right? As of the end of last week, the stock market had tanked. It was down, a couple percent, mostly on news from Italy. There was a lot of volatility due to news from Italy. And so I think people are actually paying attention over here.
Yeah, but it's surprising, said from a financial economist. But I think that the biggest reason to watch Italy is not from a financial point of view, and there are plenty of reasons to watch it from a financial point of view, but from a political point of view. Believe it or not, Italy is 20 years ahead of the United States, unfortunately 20 years ahead down the tube, but it's 20 years ahead. And I think that you want to watch what's happening there to understand what might happen here.
Okay, so just to recap really quickly, we did an episode on Italy just about 2 months ago called Worse Than Brexit. And on that episode, Luigi shared with us a little bit of insight into what's going on in Italian politics today.
Eventually, a coalition between these two parties who are anti-establishment, the League and the Five Star, took place after a lot of problems, shenanigans that I will skip for brevity, but I think that the important point is two parties that are basically kind of like Bernie Sanders and Steve Bannon getting together and form a government.
That's insane.
And this seems like so crazy. In fact, you laugh, Kate, but I think is not that crazy after all. And that's what we would like to understand is why they got together, on what basis, and what does this imply for the rest of the world? Because as we heard in the clip at the beginning of the podcast, Steve Bannon is in Rome claiming that this is a victory of nationalists against the globalist elite. And is it? And is it the sign that things are changing? I think that's what we want to discuss today.
So I know you said for the sake of brevity, you don't want to get too much into the details, but why were markets so spooked as of the end of last week?
So at some point in the negotiation for forming this coalition, the two parties converge on the name of an economic minister who has a position that are quite anti-euro. And so the president said that he did not want to appoint him as a economic minister because of the impact this will have on the market. And, you know, this is at the borderline of the constitutional powers of the president. In our constitution, the president is a bit like the queen in England. The president appoints the prime minister and under the suggestion of the prime minister, appoints the minister. So he does have some power in saying no, but generally is not for ideological reason. If you appoint a crook as justice minister, I think that the president has all the right to say no. If you appoint somebody who is perfectly qualified to be, but has a different ideology, in principle, you're not supposed to say no. But I think that the reality is there was a lot of uncertainty whether one of the two parties in the coalition, particularly the League, wanted to be part of this coalition. And my understanding is tension with the president was used as an excuse to get out. And then when they got out, the market was spooked even more. And so they realized that they better do something, otherwise the country can fall apart and they are blamed for this lack of government. So I think eventually sanity prevailed and they did form a government.
Can you tell us more about how the League is like Trump's party and how the Five Star Movement is like Bernie Sanders' party?
So I think that for American listener, the League is relatively easy to explain because in spite of its historical origin, today is very much like a Trump party. In fact, the leader of the League, Salvini, was the one of the first Western leaders to endorse Trump. They are anti-immigrant. They are very much pro-business, especially pro-small business. They are in favor of cutting taxes. They even propose a flat personal income tax, which really is not that flat, but at least they claim is that way. And so they are really kind of a Trump party. I would say even like a Bannon party, because Trump is the combination, in my view, of a populist route and a plutocratic side. And I don't think there is any plutocratic element in the League. Is only the populist side.
And what about the Five Star Movement? How are they like Bernie supporters?
The Five Star Movement is, in my view, the most interesting because, first of all, they didn't exist 10 years ago. And in 10 years, they went from being nobody to express the prime minister. And they did that without being supported by any big business, by any big donors, by anybody, and having all the establishment, all the media against them. And in a sense, it's a bit of a miracle. And imagine that you have John Stewart hooking up with a Silicon Valley genius and
Elon Musk.
Yeah, maybe Elon Musk. And forming a party together and really going grassroots. And because they start so grassroots and so in a non-ideological way, they are, first of all, not a strongly ideological party and trying to express what ordinary people care about. So one thing, they are very pro-environment, which is quite unique in the Italian environment. They are pro-universal basic income, and they are very strongly anti-corruption and anti-establishment. So in that sense, they might resemble a lot to a Bernie Sanders party. On the other hand, they are... I wouldn't say anti-immigration in general, but they are worried about the consequences of the way immigration took place in Italy. So that is one of the points of connection with the League. So they're not exactly a Bernie Sanders party, but I would say they are pretty close to a Bernie Sanders party, also in the way they finance themselves, which is very diffuse, not having strong donors supporting them.
So now that the League and the Five Star Movement have come together to form this coalition government, what are some of the policies that they're proposing?
So in a move that is unprecedented in Italian politics, they actually spent almost a month creating a contract between the two parties to discipline what they're going to do in government. It's a bit like what Angela Merkel did with... the Social Democrats in Germany. And this is fairly usual in other countries. In Italy, is unique. However, this document contains mostly how they're going to spend the money, not how they're going to raise the money, which, of course, creates some problems, given that Italy does not have the flexibility of running such large deficit, given the amount of debt it already has. So the characterizing element of this is some form of a flat tax, even if the word flat, as I said in a second ago, is not precisely right, but some form of fiscal reform that lowers that will lower the burden of taxation on individuals and on small corporation. Second, some form of welfare. Again, it's not exactly a universal basic income because they're going to make it conditional on searching for a job, but it's going in a direction of increasing welfare in Italy, which is quite underdeveloped. And then they have a number of initiatives that are much more on the justice side. For example, in Italy, there is this absurdity of having a very short statute of limitation. So if you commit a crime, and your lawyer is good enough to drag a trial with all the excuses, you end up being acquitted because of the statute of limitation. And this law was introduced by Berlusconi many years ago in order to get out of a number of trials. But of course, not only got Berlusconi off the hook, got a lot of other people off the hook. And in fact, is a fairly common idea today in Italy that you can get away committing crimes, especially when it comes to financial crimes, without paying for them. And last but not least, they want to renegotiate many things in Europe. The most important one is the way immigrants are handled. There is an agreement called Dublin Agreement that basically gives all the responsibility of accepting and nurturing and supporting the immigrants in the countries that first receive them, and then makes it difficult for them to reallocate those within the European Union. And because most of the immigrants now are coming from Libya, Italy is the country with this enormous amount of immigration. And we don't have the resources to handle them properly, and the other countries don't want to accept them. So we are not the country of destination of most of the immigrants, but we are the country that is burdened the most.
So there seems to be a lot going on in Italy, but I would say that this is hardly new, right? We had Brexit, we had Marine Le Pen in France, we had the populist elections of Orban in Hungary, and then we recently had populist elections in Slovenia. And so it seems like Italy is just part of a bigger movement across all of Europe.
There is definitely a common element in all these movements. However, what I think makes Italy somewhat unique is that it has two populist movements, a more right-wing one and a more left-wing one. And what makes it extraordinary is that these two movements decide to somewhat form an alliance, and they, at the moment, they are running the country. While Trump won an election, first of all, the coalition that led Trump to election is not just a populist coalition. There is a populist part, and there is a traditional Republican part, and there is definitely no element of left-wing populists in the Trump administration. So I think that this is the first contrast between populist and, if you want, globalist. And even in England, where you had Brexit, the Theresa May government is struggling, but it's not. You cannot say that it's completely a sort of anti-globalist government. While I think that the government is forming today in Italy is of that type.
So why is this happening in Italy first?
So I think that this is a result of two factors. One are the very poor economic conditions of Italy. Per capita income is lower than 20 years ago. We had two crises, one after the other, very costly. And we have very high level of unemployment, especially in the south of Italy. The second is Italy is has 20 years of Berlusconi, more or less, on his back. And 20 years in which the televisions and the main media were somewhat influenced by one description of the world. And so, and what happened in the last government, while in principle this government was of the Democratic Party, has the explicit or implicit support of Berlusconi. So there was kind of an alliance between the elites of left and right that naturally led to a counter-alliance of the people who felt left behind, whether they were ideologically more on the left or ideologically more on the right.
So do you see a parallel between Berlusconi in Italy 20 years ago versus Trump in the United States now?
I think I see a parallel between what's happening and the feeling that people have in the United States today and the feelings of Italy, because it is true that there is a lot of left and right ideology based on civil rights and abortion and religious beliefs, but very little difference in terms of economic discourse. Both the Bush administration and the Clinton administration are very much in the pocket of business. And I think that this is exactly what Italians feel about the political environment, that whether it's left or right doesn't really make a difference, because at the end of the day, they play the same strategy, the same policies, with a little bit more politically correctness on top. But that's not what changes the life of somebody who is unemployed. Whether you are more politically correct doesn't change his future.
But I don't think it's fair to say, oh, there are some cultural differences between the U.S. and Italy, but at the end of the day, there's this unifying theme in economic circumstances, because those cultural differences, I think, are huge, whereas I think that the unifying economic circumstances between discontent in the U.S. and discontent in Italy are actually quite big, right? We didn't realize two recessions. Our unemployment rate right now is back down to 4%. I mean, growth since the financial crisis has been higher than growth in Italy. And so we haven't had it as bad as you had it in Italy.
I think you're absolutely right. And that's the reason why you don't have such a strong coalition yet. But imagine things get worse. I think that's a distinct possibility. And second, I think there is much more variety within the United States than within Italy. There is a lot of geographical variety in Italy, but I think that in terms of growth, it's true that on average the United States grew. It's also true that if you look at the median income in the United States, did not grow for 40 years. So while it's true that average income is growing, I'm not so sure that the median American feels that.
So then you think that this is basically an epidemic for all of Western societies, that there's been a slowdown in median incomes, and what you think that this will inevitably lead to, like, the convergence of these populist movements between the right and the left in all Western countries?
I think it's a distinct possibility we need to be worried about, because I think that this convergence arises from the convergence of interests on the other side. The fact that at the end of the day, leaving abortion and gay rights aside, there is not that much of a difference between Bush and Hillary Clinton. And so if they are all too similar, I think that on the other side, people are saying, why are we left behind? And the answer is because of the influence that corporations tend to have, invested in general tend to have on U.S. policies, but also in the world policies. I think that what is stunning to me is you take the biggest leader of left-wing movements across the world, and they all end up becoming rich catering to a large corporation. From Tony Blair, who goes around giving speeches for millions, to Bill Clinton himself, to Schröder, who was the leader of the SPD in Germany. And first he was the president of Gazprom, a Russian oil company, and now is in other important position in business, to actually Matteo Renzi, who is still in parliament, is the former prime minister, is still in parliament, goes around giving speeches all over the world, pay speeches all over the world. If these are the leaders of the left, I think there is room for a new left. And I understand this takes a realignment. This does not happen overnight. But let me tell you this funny story. Is in 2007, I think, Beppe Grillo, he's the founder of Five Star Movement, wanted to run in a Democratic primary. And the guy in the Democratic primary said, we don't let you run. Go found your own party. And he did. And now he won the election. So that's a pretty good story. But that is what it takes to realign. I think that if the Democratic Party pushes out everybody with different ideas, maybe there will be another party coming. Another party with some of the characteristics of the left, but not others. And what is amazing is in the world of social media, this is more possible than it was in the past. And as the Trump election shows, having all the established media against is almost like a badge of honor. In the past, was a kiss of death. Today might be worn as a badge of honor and might bring you to the White House.
I think another key difference between the U.S. and Italy is that we don't have Brussels, right? We don't have the EU and the ECB sort of taking the other side against us. There's no like overarching governing body that we feel like is disenfranchising us. Whereas I feel like anti-Eurozone or anti-Euro sentiment in Italy is kind of what's bringing a lot of these parties together.
Wait a second. You have Washington, the ultimate swamp, right? And all the reaction that there is in Europe against Brussels is the typical reaction that people have here against centralized government and against a government in Washington that is completely dominated by vested interests and not responsive to the need of the people. I don't think there is any difference in that dimension.
No, but that's not a fair comparison, because Washington would be like anger against Washington would be like anger in the Five Star Movement against the establishment within Italy. I see that comparison. But there's also this anger against a broader party of other countries in which Italy feels disenfranchised.
I think you are right in the issue that you can play on some ethnic differences in Europe. You cannot play in the United States. So people in Colorado might feel that Washington is a swamp and that Washington is taking away powers and money from them, but they don't feel that people in Washington are necessarily different from who they are. And people in Washington don't make fun of people in Colorado. What we have seen, especially in recent weeks, we have seen, for example, the German magazines and newspapers making fun of Italy in the way, using the worst stereotypes on the face of Earth, something that probably in the United States will disqualify you for him to speak in Parliament. But these were not fringe magazine or newspaper. These were the mainstream media, even some mainstream politician. There was one politician that said, oh, financial markets will eventually teach Italians how they should vote, which is clearly a very anti-democratic things to say. And they don't even resign when they say these things. Sometimes they apologize, sometimes not. I think that is really the difference. There is more ethnic fractionalization within Europe than there is within the United States.
Yeah, and also speaking of fractionalization, this brings me to my last point, which I think distinguishes the U.S. from Italy, which is that we have a different history. We have a unique and sad relationship with slavery that still persists and is very dominant in our culture today. We have things like Black Lives Matter, and we also have a lot of movements around like police brutality towards young Black men. I don't think that that is as strong of an element of the debate in Italy as it is here in the U.S. And I also think that there are other social issues that are much more absent in Europe, for example, like gun control. That's a huge issue in the U.S. That's very fundamental to the divide between the left and the right. And it's not at all present in Italy. And I don't think, even though you might say that, like, oh, gun control is a relatively minor issue compared to, like, economic growth, I think in the minds of most Americans, it's something that, like, no one is willing to compromise on. And it's something that will always keep the parties apart.
I think you're right. Of course, every country is different. And the importance of the legacy of slavery in the United States is a tremendous legacy that other countries in Europe don't have, even if now they do have racial issues because the number of immigrants has increased quite a bit. And the issue of gun control is a big dividing issue. So it is possible that the coalition will never form. However, I think that there is an element of truth in the tension between a group of people, let's call them globalists, that are benefiting tremendously from globalization. And let's be fair, we are part of that. And a group of people who are left out. What we need to think is how to fix the problem before this coalition is forming, because I think it would be very divisive.
I think the solution to how we can prevent a left-right populist coalition in the United States has to stem from a deep and true understanding of what the cause of all this resentment is. There's some people who claim that these populist movements are coming about as a result of the financial crisis and the inability of Western democracies to heal from the financial crisis. And then there are others who think that the roots are much deeper and that they stem from the rise of globalization and technology that started taking place in like the 70s and 80s. And I'm more in the camp of people who think that populism is the result of globalization and technology. And I think that the only solution to these challenges, the challenges that they pose to Western democracies, is to increase the quality of our education so that we're more competitive. At the end of the day, though, maybe none of this matters, right? Maybe Trump is going to implode in a violent tweet storm, and maybe the coalition between the League and the Five Star Movement in Italy is going to fall apart because ideologically they're actually pretty different. So who's to say that the remedy actually isn't going to be that these current governing parties in the US and Italy just fail one day?
It's entirely possible, but I think we should watch this experiment with interest, because if it succeeds, it might change the way we look at politics also in the United States.
You've been listening to Capitalism, hosted by Kate Waldock and Luigi Zingales, and produced by Derek John, a podcast of the University of Chicago Stiegler Center in collaboration with the Chicago Booth Review. You can find episode transcripts and research links at capitalism.com. Also, check out promarket.org, the blog of the Stiegler Center, and don't forget to subscribe and leave a review wherever you get your podcasts.